The Great Canadian Talk Show.
There's only a couple of watts, but I brought the truth to everyone within three blocks of the west side of campus.
No way! Yes way!
And now, let's get right down to business with Marty Gold.
Welcome to the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast. This is episode 44 of season 4. I'm Marty Gold. Thank you for listening. New listeners especially, thanks for joining us. You can find every episode of our podcast under the podcast tab. There's lots to listen to and convenient categories, and you can get caught up on things. That's what this episode is really about. We're going to be getting caught up on a number of things that we've covered in the past, updating a couple of stories, including more information about the MTS layoffs in Brandon, something that we broke 2 weeks ahead of the mainstream media. More about the Assiniboia bike lane. This is sort of an offshoot of it. The desire of the bike lobby to interfere with access and egress to Assiniboine Avenue at Main Street. Amazing audio from the committee meeting today about the kind of trickery being played by the public service on councillors. And I'm going to be going off on that in this episode later on. As well, an update on various matters involving the ward of St. Boniface. That'll be on the city section. I'll be talking about the closure of that Starbucks on Corden as well. And if I'm lucky, I'll have time for a short third segment. We'll get caught up on a couple of matters involving the provincial government and provincial politics. So lots to come here, but off the top here in part one, listener comments, firstly, with regards to, exclusively with regards to the tribute that I put out in the last episode for my friend Brian Smiley. We've gotten some reaction. I want to reflect back to my audience as well. Follow up about the episode before that, the case involving Dan Rents and a 911 call that wasn't responded to, and some news on that case as well. So that's going to be part one. I'll get right into it. It's been a hard time for everybody that knew Brian to absorb the news of his passing. And I got reaction via email to the episode. This one was, I think, really the first one I got. I just wanted to write and tell you how much I loved your tribute to my brother. He definitely was one of a kind. Your tribute brought tears to my eyes. Makes me so proud to know how well-liked he was. I also got, later on, a couple of hours later, a text from Brian's wife, emphasizing how close their family is. From a friend of Brian's from his days in Alberta, who said that they enjoyed listening to my description of the Brian that I knew and loved. And got another email as well from a person in the local TV news industry who had known Brian for a couple of decades and had been in touch with him, but was never made aware that he was ill. So this was quite a shock to them. He was so funny, so strong-willed, confident, so good at what he did, is what they wrote. He was one of the guys that if he liked you, you knew it. And if he didn't, you knew that too. A very supportive friend, always asked about my boys too. Thank you for doing this show. In that regard, it's unfortunate because the closure of the press club, which I was not in favor of, but nobody asked me, the Winnipeg Press Club should not have closed. I can't even begin to describe what I think the kind of send up would have been for Brian at a press club event. And that's where the media industry here in town for years, you know, that was the threads that bind, that bound us. And we don't have that. And so I guess in some ways, my podcast has helped to create those links among the Winnipeg media, present, you know, past, present, and future, so to speak. Create some links between them with regards to Brian, who's not only highly respected in the media, as a member of the media from his prior career as a newspaper writer, but as the PR whiz, really, in being the face of MPI for so long. So I'll if I get more information about a memorial service or something, I'll make sure to pass that along. And I want to thank everybody There's been other comments that have come in, but those from those who, you know, it's just a cross-section from his family and people that knew him over a course of 20 years. Now, happier news, the Dan Rentz case, we've shed some light on that in episode 42, having Sheena Patterson on. Sheena and Dan were together for many years, share a daughter, and in his passing, they've been trying to get their hands on the 911 tape to verify the city's claim that the call was handled appropriately when a unit was not dispatched to engage in a mental wellness check for Dan, who they had had previous contact with. This was not something completely out of the blue or something that hadn't been dealt with before. With the help of some listeners and people becoming more aware of the controversy and the death of Dan Lentz by the story being posted on Twitter and Facebook and wherever else, the family's had some success raising money towards legal costs. Sheena posting earlier today as I record this, she's doing a raffle with, I think it's 12 massage therapy sessions. I'll put the link in the episode description. If you want to get in on the action, I think they're $25 each, 125 sold, 125 remaining, trying to raise sufficient funds for a lawyer. And the first batch of money is already gone in the form of a retainer. I understand it to a lawyer they need help in getting to the bottom of what happened. And it's not just what happened, but can something be improved so this doesn't happen again? And is there a bias? The Sheena raising the question, if there's a bias in the 911 response based on whether a caller is a male or a female, based on the address they call from, the type of call. And this is important. And I'm going to stay on the case. Back with more. We'll turn our attention to City Hall right after these words from our sponsors.
If you have a story tip, an interview idea, or information the public needs to know, let us know. The Great Canadian Talk Show. Email martygoldlive@gmail.com. TGCTS. Old-fashioned investigative reporting that matters.
This episode of the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast is sponsored by Jamrock Security, protecting your family, your business, and your community. Call 204-880-1564 or go to jamrocksecurity.ca, your trusted security partner.
For your home renovation and repair needs, call PKP. For over 20 years, we've built trusted relationships in the North End, West Kildonan, Garden City, and the Maples. Buying a refurbished home? We'll do your pre-purchase inspection and make sure you get what you're paying for. Go to our Facebook page, PKP Renovations and Repairs, or call us 204-297-5446. That's 204-297-5446. PKP Renovations and Repairs.
As I move on with episode 44, why do I go 44? Because a taxi dispatcher, and boy, I can't remember offhand who it was, but one of them in calling the trips out, they're sometimes dispatchers try to make it a little more distinctive, make sure the driver was like paying attention or awake, or just to break up the monotony of number 4, number 63. So every once in a while, you'd get somebody put on a bit of a show, 44. And that's why I go 44. 44 was a popular car with the dispatcher, but I really don't remember why at the current time. So that's why I say that. Now, one thing I forgot in our roundups, the story that the episode we did on April 24th about the shooting of Brad Singer and the interview I conducted with his brother Jerry, family gets ambulance and cleanup bills, but no answers after cop shooting. I've been advised that in the course of conversation, I talked about whether they had accessed or tried to access documentation from the Health Sciences Center. And I've been advised by the family that they've submitted a formal request to the HSC records for the history of Brad's interaction with the hospital, visits, medication, what's called previous Form 2 requests, which I guess is for evaluation. And I'm sure that we'll be... Well, I know I'm going to continue to follow up on this story anyways. It's in our top 10, as a lot of the stories in 2024 moved into the top 10, and that's one of them way high up there. Now, pivoting across to matters of civics, I'm going to start with something about a city councilor and an esteemed local pundit who gets a lot of column space in the free press, although there's a lot of empty space between the ears going on sometimes. And we're going to hopscotch from Osborne Village to Assiniboine in Maine, and then over to St. Boniface. We're going to go from west to east here on this little corridor. We've talked about it before, because part of the bike lobby's insatiable desire to throttle traffic, crater businesses, and impose, you know, their own desires, their own standards, their own will, regardless of what kind of compromise it makes to actual public safety in many respects. Brent Bellamy wrote a column in the Free Press, Time to Talk About River and Osborne. And notes were sent to me by Kelly Ryback. His name will come up a few times, actually, in this section, this segment of the show. Ryback sent a letter that was published in the letters to the editor of the Free Press. This isn't what Bellamy ends up referencing, but he dissected a lot of the particulars of what was wrong with Bellamy's assertion that the city should be imposing a traffic scramble at Osborne and River Avenue and other harebrained schemes. Interesting what Brent Bellamy didn't mention, wrote Ryback, a gadfly over at City Hall, as we've described before, regular analyst. Bellamy wrote of where the driver's eye should be when moving through a slip lane. He didn't mention where the pedestrian's eye should be and not be. Too often pedestrians are on their phones when crossing an intersection, dawdling. I've witnessed pedestrians crossing with a light without looking to ensure it's safe to cross. I can assert that these are correct statements. Very common now in Winnipeg for people to be paying absolutely no attention to traffic as they're crossing lanes whatsoever. He didn't mention, continued Kelly Ryback, the cyclists who do not obey traffic laws and signals. He did not mention the proximity of a fire hall to River and Osborne and the impact a scramble intersection would have to response times. I'm going to be coming back to this later. This general question. The proximity of a fire hall to River and Osborne, the impact of a scramble intersection on response times, nor did he mention the scenario where emergency vehicles could change a traffic light to green. Now, Council Rollins, it being her district, Fort Rouge, Sherry Rollins had promoted this Free Press article. Cities should scramble to transform whatever it said, Osborne Village, whatever the rest of the title was. And one of our listeners made the point on Twitter directly to her, Nero, saying, make a pedestrian scramble a block away from a fire hall or a car speeding heavy machinery. If you really thought this through. Well, that's not the only thing that wasn't thought through. Within like 2 days, maybe, I think, I guess it was on May 1st, there was the whole letters to the editor section of the Winnipeg Free Press was about Bellamy's column, evidently. Certainly a number of letters were written, and one by Councillor Ross Edie. Now, listen to the kinds of other points about public safety that Ross Edie, that he makes with regards to this column by Brent Bellamy, and then you're going to hear how Bellamy reacted. Mr. Bellamy's articles on urban design have a tendency to dream and not be practical. The article on River and Osborne becoming a scramble intersection makes some good reasoning, but the article makes three statements I take as a load of bunk. Firstly, Councillor Edie disputing the statement on kids using the intersection to walk to school, saying the kids that go to Gladstone School or Fort Rouge School, which are on River and on Gertrude, that they should be using Nassau to make the walk. That's the argument that Edie's saying. You know, you take the less busy streets. And I know that for subsequently there was an argument made that there are kids that use the intersection that are going to, like, to Calvin, I guess. And maybe, I guess, to Churchill High. But those, again, are already older kids who should be able to navigate the urban environment. They're not little kids. So Edie, first of all, doesn't think that this is really an issue involving, think of the children. The reasoning on slip lanes, wrote Councillor Edie, is something I agree with, but the easiest slip lane for pedestrians who are blind to use is at River and Osborne, because the island is quite large, giving the bus stop. He then referenced a different slip lane downriver at Roslyn Road near 55 Nassau. And Councillor Edie was unaware when he wrote this, that slip lane had been eliminated last year as part of the redesign of River. So there's no slip lane, so you can just peel off right off of River to go back towards Roslyn Road. So he says that this actually, slip lane, the island there, is actually beneficial to those who are have disabilities or are visually impaired. It's great, wrote the counselor. The Osborne Village Biz has undertaken the work to come up with a strategy to make it easier for customers to get around on Osborne, but moving quickly on installing bike lanes and scramble intersections is very dangerous for at least pedestrians who happen to be blind and people with other disabilities. I want Mr. Bellamy, now listen how Edie very professionally addresses this. I want Mr. Bellamy to understand from this person who's totally blind, having used many of the streets in Osborne Village, other than a couple of very physically fit young adults who may use a scramble intersection to go diagonal, we need to maintain a straight line of travel in order to stay safe as pedestrians using intersections. Rounded curb cuts, confusing the blind walker. It's a straight line direction. A person who's blind cannot walk in the bike lane, which Edie said, happened to him on Lindale Drive. Cyclists shouting at me for invading their space. You know, I'm just going to interrupt this for 1 second. I'm going to bring this up again. It's like people in Winnipeg really don't, either they've forgotten or they were never taught what it means when somebody's walking with a white cane and that they are visually impaired. And certainly the Sunday night crowd at the Forks didn't give two shits when a blind person wearing the requisite white cane and dark glasses was approaching. I saw that myself this past weekend. And there you have cyclists shouting at somebody with a white cane. Huh, not surprising. A person who is blind, if they were to change river in Osborne to a scramble, because they've got to go in straight lines, a person who is blind will need to wait two intervals to avoid a difficult diagonal crossing. Though at least, moving forward, he said, at least a full consultation with persons with disabilities need to happen. So the Public Works Committee made the right decision. They blew it off for a study or something. And those who want to move quickly are not making good decisions, no matter that the other cities have scramble intersections, which are probably not universally accessible. And what did Brent Bellamy, Free Press columnist, esteemed architect, super genius, what did he say? He saw this, he took a screen cap of the an image of the letters, the editor section in the Free Press, put it up on Twitter and said, wow, the entire letters of the editor section responding to my call, including one from a city councilor who dislikes scramble crossings and hates slip lanes. I think most pedestrians would be satisfied if we started by removing slip lanes. I bet you most drivers would be satisfied if we started eliminating bike lanes. But that's not the world Brent Bellamy lives in, is it? No. What most pedestrians want should override the best interests, the actual public safety concerns of the elderly, the disabled, and the blind. He just dismisses it. What Ross Edie wrote, I just read it to you. It was reasonable. It was easy to follow. It pointed out serious potential, I don't mean to make a pun, impacts on disabled people using that intersection, on blind people using the intersection. Ooh, one from a counselor who dislikes scramble crossings and hates slip lanes. Well, actually, him hating slip lanes, he's on the same team. Except that's one that works and is necessary for traffic flow. I sent this tweet to Councillor Edie. He said, ooh, this guy has an architecture stamp. Wow. I concluded with a statement the committee made the right decision not to move so fast to allow for consultation with people with persons with disabilities and deal with any issues that might make other cities scramble in intersections ineffectual. There are many times a construction project violates the universal design standards due to the attitude. Mr. Bellamy has mistakenly expressed this tweet. I did not say it's scramble intersections. Just build it the right way for universal reuse. And by the way, there is a proper standard for slip lanes to be built that use the curb cut to direct somebody who is blind to the island. Maybe architects, wrote Councillor Edie, should be penalized under the Accessibility for Manitobans Act. Can you imagine that? Brent Bellamy being held accountable for anything? Any of these architects? So we start at Osborne Village, and now we move over to Assiniboine and Main. Now, this was all part of the 2010 rush to bike lanes that the city rammed through. And part of the argument back then, 2009, 2010, about Assiniboine Avenue was the desire of the so-called Friends of Upper Fort Garry, 52 members, 37 of whom were members of Manitoba Club, to close off the intersection at Assiniboine at Main Street so people couldn't turn right, eliminate traffic from there, as well as eliminate the apartment block that was planned by Crystal Properties so they didn't want to smell people's barbecues or have people yelling at their kids, interrupting the aura of the Manitoba Club, and they wanted to close it off. And Gary Hilderman, I'll pull this out because we wrote about it, but I've told a number of people. This started with a desire, the Friends of Upper Fort Garry, to take over Bonnycastle Park, expanded all this other nonsense. We see what kind of liars they were, how they've duped the public and done nothing. Well, they operate a parking lot now, of course. They've done nothing. This was originally their idea, and the argument was, well, I don't care if people have to wait 30 seconds to get around the corner. In other words, to go down Fort and back around. Well, it turned out that was closer to 5 minutes, and I was begged to stop pounding on that issue a number of years ago by somebody who said that the Friends had dropped this, and they would not be mentioning it, and could I please stop reminding people? Well, I'm going to remind them, because the mantle of this idiocy has been picked up by the bike lobby, the snobs, those who look at Brent Bellamy as some sort of a great oracle. And so this came back to the Public Works Committee. Now, there are a number of factors that preclude this, but that's not going to stop the individuals sitting in the hot seats over at 510 Main Street. Kelly Ryback, mentioned him earlier, he appeared today at council at the committee meeting, and he made a number of points with regards to emergency vehicle response, ambulances going to the St. Boniface Hospital. Whether anybody, in my opinion, you have to ask the drivers. And don't just believe the words of the bosses. But the original reason why you could not alter access and egress to that corner is because of the presence, as I explained to Councillor White a few weeks ago. The clue was Wally Fox Decent, the good admiral. Long time, late lamented political science professor at University of Manitoba. Admiral Waldrop Fox Decent was the Commodore or whatever, of the HMCS Chippewa at the corner of what's called Navy Way. It's Smith Street, the foot of Assiniboine. Can you imagine the city not even contemplating this? Because, of course, they didn't. And they didn't in 2010, but they did get an earful because it was part of the decision-making process at City Hall back then not to push for this, that you can't close access and egress for a military base, particularly in times of war, as Councillor White pointed out today, because they have to get directly to the hospital if there's a munitions accident. That would be St. Boniface Hospital. So you'd have to go down Assiniboine to Maine. But these geniuses at City Hall, and I'm going to play some audio because this blew me away today. It was just stunning what I was hearing. You've got the consideration of the naval base. They don't give a shit. You have consideration of emergency vehicles. They really don't give a shit. You have just the general question of how is this going to affect traffic backing up through the neighborhood the way it did in 2010 when they first started monkeying around with which streets it was. And to this day, when you go up Carlton across Broadway, there is no sign telling you that you do not have eastbound access. You can't go to Carlton and turn left. There's no signs warning you of that till you get to the corner. That's over 15 years after Mike O'Shaughnessy told me, Councilor O'Shaughnessy said that there would be signage installed. Now, part of this idea, as we saw from the map that was prepared for this item to go in front of Public Works today, was to block off access at Fort so cars would have to turn left. But the cars coming off of Main Street, they'd be able to find parking spots, access parking spots, in a close-off area. They're going to try to do like what they did, like on, is it Pacific, maybe in the East Exchange, with angle parking, so you'd go in, you back up. So you got all these cars turning out Main, but if you see a parking spot, you're going to stop, blink your lights, you're going to back up and angle in. Well, part of the idea of the Bonnycastle, the park, is take your dog there. I think there a dog park there? Didn't they establish one over there? Well, good luck getting your dog out. Instead of having, you know, one side of your car to the curb, now you're going to, you know, have the driver's side on one side, a car beside you on one side, and somebody's Nissan on the other side. These are the kinds of effects of this kind of vapid, empty-headed legislative initiatives. And, of course, there is a hidden agenda, as Councillor White pointed out, which we'll get into. I'm going to play some audio now from the public meeting of the, and a few points are made. But what you're going to hear in particular is how city councilors describe the kind of report that was put before them today. And the implications as they catch on that this is pretty big stuff to just fob off on a department. Be with the audio right now. The councilors weren't even clear on what the map was showing in terms of what was going to be changed to a one-way, etc. But it's going to pick up right now. You'll hear Councillor Lukes and Councillor Wyatt, Debbie Sharma, the third councillor on the committee, somewhat silent during this segment. But you're going to hear, first of all, you're going to hear what's clearly a half-truth about what the ambulance service, emergency services would have said. Because as Councillor Wyatt explained later, there's no way that they're going to say that there aren't concerns. It's a question of what kind of a question were they asked and what information were they given. But you'll catch on here in just a second.
Okay, so it increases the parking. So I do want to address the concern about the individual worried about the emergency ambulances.
If I can,
yes.
My staff advised me that they, during the working on this project, they communicated with emergency fire and the ambulance, and they said they had no concerns with this. When they set up, they don't usually set up on the south side by where the cafeteria is in that building. The accesses into the apartments that are part of that tower complex are on the east side. So they're already headed towards.
Okay, I'm just going to stop it right there just to explain. So they're talking about responding to the Fort Garry Place high-rises. They weren't asked about affecting emergency response in a St. Boniface or getting to the hospital. So you see there that the administration they're lying by omission, which they frequently do to try to fool Janice Lukes, as we've seen here in St. Boniface with the Moving on Marion project. I'll continue the audio now. But now you folks understand why this is bullshit.
Broadway.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Good point.
Okay. See, so she's
completely... You're saying, yeah, you are, if you want to use that corridor, and now it's closed and you've got to go to the next corridor, yes, there's going to be a small amount of additional time to make that move.
So who generated this drawing in the report?
Who generated the drawing? Part of the problem is the poor information. Why it's flagged that.
Is
that ours?
Looks like it. Yeah, that's ours. The attachment A is a.
But if we're receiving this as information, we're not doing that.
Right? Yeah, let's talk about
let's
that.
Let's talk about
now, here's the next trick. People make decisions about whether to speak at council often based on how the item is listed on the agenda. When you see received as information, that traditionally has meant the recommendation of the administration is for council not to move on it, not to move forward. We recommend you receive it as information and you file it. And you can see that that's why it's understanding. But here's the kind of tricks, the kind of dirty tricks that the planning department, the public works department, all these bureaucrats, here's an example of the kind of tricks they're playing. Listen to this.
Because it was said this morning several times that if it just is received for information, that means it just goes on a shelf or it goes in the garbage can or something like that. The way this report is written, the way the author intended it in my division, they said what they're saying here is the plan is to proceed with it. They went looking for direction to proceed or not proceed from the committee. With all due respect, they were intending to just go forward and roll this out.
Who's they?
The public service.
Where did they get direction to do that?
The public service makes changes to the network.
Not roads like this without authority from council.
Well, that said, if there is a motion or amendments to this, if there are amendments to this to change it to say proceed.
That's a negative recommendation, Dave.
Well,
it's a tricky recommendation.
Well, no, this is dangerous if we start doing this because we'll miss it.
There are some instances like I've
seen multiple ones like this.
Did we delegate? I guess my question is this: did we delegate authority to the department to make major changes to major intersections in the city without coming to council? Did we delegate that authority? Maybe it's before my time back on comes.
Under there was delegation to the manager of transportation in what 2013, or maybe it was earlier than that.
So sometime around the time that Phil Schlegel was running things, they established a process so that the Department of Transportation could work hand in glove with these urban visionaries to change roadways. And I'm not going to play more of that much more of the audio. As Y points out, they don't get the phone calls and complaints. The counselors do. They say they measure feedback, but they don't measure the feedback the counselors get. So how do you have a situation, a process, where something says information, which is one of the reasons why I did not step forward to speak today about this matter, because the recommendation was to not move on it. It says, well, we're seeking direction whether to proceed or not. We're going to proceed anyways. And Janice Lukes, the chair, calls it tricky. Is this something that was established under the prior chairs of Public Works? Good question. Don't you think? I think so. Janice Lukes referred to this as confusing. So, Councillor Wyatt, Russ Wyatt, he wanted this sent back for a new drawing. And what if we put up lights there, signals, so the pedestrians get a signal to cross? There's no right on red to go southbound on in a St. Boniface. And what's the administration's... There's another factor. Construction on Navy Way to Hargrave. In other words, under the bridge on Assiniboine, that's supposed to start tomorrow. The eastbound lane of Assiniboine. So think of that. They say they want to close this off, and they're going to measure the effect. They're going to time this out. They're going to do traffic counts. But they're deflating artificially the amount of traffic that will be coming eastbound. So in the end, far less traffic than would in normal times be affected by this left-hand turn, clogging up Fort and the right-hand turn around Broadway to go back around the corner to go to St. Boniface, the long-ago desire of the Manitoba Club. They want to do a pilot project at the same time as the vehicle count is artificially deflated. So you go, oh, it's not that big of a deal, and the bike lobby will get their way. And Russ Wyatt, of course, he smells this out. He's smart to this. But this is the kind of thing that the mainstream media in Winnipeg will never explain to you. And people, how did this happen? Well, we follow procedure. The first thing they didn't follow is when they know they're fooling people about who may be interested in attending something, when they say, oh, for information, but it's not really just for information, that they're going to proceed anyway. And they talk about whether the staging of the ambulances or fire trucks, but not about them accessing St. Boniface. And there's more yet to come here with this. There's one more clip I'm going to play. So Russ Wyatt, sniffing through this, called it a Trojan horse. It's not a pilot, it's a Trojan horse. So you're going to hear one more clip here about how the administration, not only do they pretend that this is being submitted for information, you'll hear Wyatt flag that, but you'll hear a couple other things. It all boils down in the end to, it's so cheap, let's just do it. After not giving proper information to the councillors and to the public, listen to this.
Madam Chair, if we just vote for information, they're going to do the change. And I can't support
that's fine.
The other, through the chair, the other thing to consider, councillor, is that this isn't permanent. This is a pilot that is going to be evaluated and communicated back on.
Yeah, the intent was to use low-cost materials to implement it and to report on it.
You heard what I said, what I called a pilot. A Trojan horse. Not a pilot.
That's, I think the language like saying Trojan horse when you say pilot is, That's up to sin to the public service, I'd say.
Well, no, it is a Trojan horse because once the pilot's done, it will stay.
If there are pilots that don't win, we take them out before we've even done the pilot. We kill the pilot.
But how do you determine the pilot's not going to work? What is the scoring, or how is that determined?
That's a good question, eh?
Report on the different measures of it. What traffic is it? What's happened to the traffic? What's happened to the pedestrians? Does it solve the issue that's been identified?
And what about informal? Like people calling their counselor.
We capture that information. We capture those people in water, so we report back on it.
We're not going to proceed, isn't it, folks?
He had a lot of statistics about the number of near misses and hits and data like that. When they come back with their final report, they'll do a comparison of, did these changes improve any of these pedestrian cycling issues? And then we're asking in this motion that they come back maybe quarterly with the
quarterly. I heard that. I go.
So my question is just quarterly? To clarify: is the proposed pilot for 1 year or is it for 2 years?
Now listen to this.
We didn't indicate that because we didn't really mention the word pilot in this.
Right.
We talked about it's pilot light, if you can say something.
Right.
Wanted to report back after a year with it in place.
Sure.
And say, has it solved the problem enough? Because we know there's a problem there.
There is a definite problem there.
So just to be clear, on page 9,
I think that's Jim Berezowski.
It does identify
speaking.
The cost to implement the Assiniboine Avenue eastbound closure at 4th Street with temporary traffic control for 1 year is $7,900. That's why when we identify temporary and we identify a time frame, that's why I'm saying it's a pilot, regardless of which way you want to look at it.
Okay,
but I'll say this.
I bet.
You guys might call this a compromise, this pilot, but they ain't going to stop here. They see this as a wedge in the door.
Who's they?
Bike lobby.
The bike lobby.
Bike lobby. Don't be in trouble. Yeah. And they see it as a wedge in the door that they're going to come back.
And for whatever reason, the video of the council, of the committee meeting ended there. The wedge, and again... we don't call it a, we say it's for information, but we're going to do it anyways. And we don't use the word pilot, and it's only $8,000. But they never asked the St. Boniface Hospital. They never asked the WHA. They didn't discuss those implications with emergency services. They certainly haven't talked to the businesses in the area, the stakeholders in the area, the way they did in 2010. In 2010, the city report said if they started restricting access and egress to that corner, it would degrade the intersection from a C to an F. Is that city policy? Is that the kind of bureaucrat you want running your city? Where on the one hand, you got Brent Bellamy saying, oh, who gives a shit about the blind people and the disabled people in Osborne Village? The bike lobby elites want their own way there. They want their own way here. Degrade the intersection, they don't care. Create absolute traffic jams. You'll have film trucks, movie crews parked on 4th Street sometimes. You're going to end up with one lane a lot of the time going through there, snaking through there to clog up that area. Maybe they should ask VJs what they think about what'll happen to their business and other businesses in the neighborhood, huh? No, they talk to the bike lobby. And then they do things that counselors call tricky. That counselors call a Trojan horse. And because the video cut off, I actually don't know what happened. I'm assuming it was passed on to for council to approve this 1 year pilot project on Assiniboine. I may have to appear at council. I haven't done that in a long time. I may have to start asking questions. I may have to insist that they find a statistic of how often ambulances and fire trucks have used that intersection from Assiniboine, from Fort to Main Street, and had to turn right. And how will they monitor? How will they measure the impact beyond the pedestrians and the cyclists? Because, of course, Wyatt had a great idea in terms of just installing some lights to try to solve the problem that way. How exactly are they going to measure? Because we know you'll have pretty much no more conflict because nobody will be turning right. So that's going to eliminate a lot of it. Sure. See how they skew this, how they fix it? Measuring vehicle volume while the eastbound lanes are closed? this kind of trickeration, as Don King used to say, that goes on in favor of the bike lobby elitists, as we've seen here. And believe me, the last thing they're going to do is ask people in St. Boniface, who are also affected, and people in St. Vitale, who are also affected by this harebrained scheme. But this is just a continuation of what's gone on. They lied to everybody. With the Moving on Marion project at that open house. They lied to Councillor Lukes about how many parking spots are being lost. The administration continues to lie, tell half-truths, quarter-truths, untruths, fake news, false truths. Now, it's not all doom and gloom. I'll finish off this part of the City Hall report, which I know has brought you information that pretty much establishes why we do what we do and why we earn your support. Speaking of St. Boniface, there was a councillor, Matt Allard, sighting, quite by accident at a no-frills. And we bantered back and forth for a moment. Speak of the devil, I said. And I said, you should call me, which really meant call me to arrange an interview. And he said, oh, you want to talk about Gulick? Well, that's not all. So I'll be following that up with an email to Councillor Allard. And no different than when I've interviewed Councillor Mays, Councillor Edie, Councillor Wyatt, the upcoming interview with Councillor Schreier, or any other interviews I'd like to do with other city councillors. Give them an idea of what we're going to talk about. Yes, the bike lanes on Goulet, the wreck of a road that was left behind, the lack of... that's on the table. Of course it is, Matt. But that's not all that's going on in St. Boniface. One small businessman I know who owns a storefront, not in St. Boniface, but he operates a storefront in West Winnipeg, another part of town, West Winnipeg, lives in St. Boniface, has for a number of years. For the fifth time, his car has been broken into, and this is in, like, maybe, I think, a three-year period. Five times. Arson in back lanes. We'll be talking about that when Matt Allard sits down for an interview. I say sits down. We could end up doing it over the phone. There's other things in the neighborhood. There's a repeated problem that I've already written Allard about and have indicated I want to talk to them about, so you won't be surprised when I want to know what's being done about the people pitching tents at the bus stop at the corner of what's called by transit Goulet and Taché, but it's actually Goulet and Goulet Place. The back lane that sort of is a cutout road to go to the St. Boniface Hospital. I mean, it was there already, but not really frequently used. But it's a back road to get to the south side of St. Boniface Hospital and the MRI Center and other such facilities. There's a bus stop there. They took out the bus shack because people were living in it. Now you have tents being pitched. Not those kind of tents. Tents. That's more than one person. And when you hear all this stuff go on about, oh, we're funding homelessness Winnipeg and this organization, that all these organizations, and nobody can get these individuals off the street. They are intimidating to nurses. They are intimidating to medical staff. They're intimidating to employees at McDonald's. I know. I use that stop. I was asked by the biz to look into it. I have asked Allard. I have sent. I have left a request for information with transit. Have not yet heard back. Nobody wants to answer. Well, Matt Allard will be asked about it. They're going to solve homelessness. They can't get like two or three people off a street corner in St. Boniface. We already lost the bus shelter. You see how this works? For the political left in this city. Oh, everywhere. These marginalized minorities. That you have all this work being research and studies and this and that, and yet in the end, they don't have to adhere to societal norms at all. I see the intimidation of women at that bus stop, maybe. Matt Allard will be able to explain how he cares, if he cares, and what he proposes can be done about it, whether it's by him, transit, social services, or somebody else. We live in a city where the city of Winnipeg put out a tweet today. Turn out your lights at night to help keep migrating birds safe. St. Boniface has got more crime than ever. and more criminals being caught wandering through the neighborhood than ever. Maybe I'll ask Matt Allard what he's more concerned about, the added safety that is provided by people having their lights on outside their doors, helping to light up the neighborhood, whether it's the front door, the side door, whatever, and providing some safety. Is he more concerned about his residents? Or is he to agree the city of Winnipeg should be telling people to turn off their lights at night to help migrating? How many migrating birds come through St. Boniface? Now, there is a happier news in St. Boniface I would also ask Matt Allard about. We've covered Happyland Park and Happyland Pool extensively here on this program. Their fundraising efforts now creeping up towards $71,000, and whether it was $185 collected by Johnny's restaurant in a small tip jar, $5 donations, $250 from Real Rio, formerly I know in the past a listener of this program, over on the north side of Provence, $1,000 by another individual, $22,500 from the MMF towards keeping Happyland Pool. And I said at the time when council was debating it, the MMF indicated clearly that they would be willing to step forward, and they did, and good on them. The MMF Winnipeg, I guess the St. Boniface local, I guess, $22,500. $5,000 from LADCO, showing their commitment to the community, and $1,000 from the Norwood Grove Biz. Another city committee, I think it's Community Services, getting a presentation on Wednesday about the degree of interest, 2,000 people signing the hard copy petition, about city planning in the realm of recreation and reports, studies that were done 15 and 20 years ago that identified that kids prefer being able to go to smaller facilities they can walk to, not need a ride to, right? Ride their bike or walk to. That makes sense because that develops a sense of community. There will be 2,000 to 3,000 more units at the former Canada Packers site, and the city thinks that Happyland Park has outlived its usefulness. Well, you're not going to get the buy-in for some big mega site over by Provence, contrary to what our good friend Councillor Rawati and others believe. So with this show of support, the city's being asked to go back to the table and reimagine what recreation in St. Boniface. It seems this pool has become more than just a very local box of water. We'll continue to follow up on that as well. Time for a break. I'll come back. I'll wrap up very quickly with an update on the Brandon MTS layoffs and a couple of other provincial matters right after this word from our sponsors.
The Great Canadian Talk Show is brought to you by The Hive Hair Company. From classic to funky, the styles of your life are at The Hive in the heart of the Osborne Village at 175 Osborne. Call 452-4483 or online, thehivehaircompany.com.
Because of you, The Great Canadian Talk Show has made headlines for over 15 years and forced important issues to be acknowledged and dealt with.
The problem here is that they want everything their own way in every situation. It's unpalatable to the general public, but they're frozen out by the process.
There are no subsidies for paying the bills for keeping the government honest.
They just see money. Of course, it's your tax dollars, but it's being spent on their pet projects.
We're on your side.
A lot of these people in special interest groups, they don't bear any relationship to your life out there. They don't have any handle on what your reality is in your neighborhood.
Support old-fashioned investigative reporting that matters.
The best source of information is not the city councilor. It is this program and you listeners.
Support TGCTS today.
Back to wrap up this edition. Very quickly, a few sort of provincial notes and then we'll be on our way. I just felt I want to get this information, all this stuff done now and try to get back into the groove a little bit. I know my voice is a little rough. I'm guessing it's allergies, but I'm going to run right through the other things you need to know that you're not necessarily being told about. And I know you're not being told about this because I and I alone, Great Canadian Talk Show, broke the news of the MTS layoffs plans for Brandon in particular. And some of the complications behind which bargaining units could or couldn't be bought out or whatever. those are actually our number... like fourth and fifth, probably all time, listen to were the episodes about MTS, and about the bubble, you know, Bell MTS, the union, the layoffs, both starting in the media and then on the telecom side. From a listener, hello, Marty, I love your reporting. There's no new news on Bell MTS stuff except for the employees who applied for the buyouts who got email notifications of their buyout approval and an email of a future end date will be sent out. So it may or may not end up being July the 1st, Canada Day. Lovely. Brandon reps are all gone, except for a few that found some loophole to keep their jobs where they can work remotely at home in another department because of their personal situations due to custody battles, which is making the company keep those people employed, which I don't understand the rules behind it, but it is what it is. I don't know if that's in the collective bargaining unit, if that's something that was in the con. I don't know where that comes from. I don't think there's a labor. Maybe there is a labor law. You can't lay off people during the school year. But if the layoffs are going to be on July the 1st, well, anyways, you've got the update. You're not, well, you will get it for mainstream media in 2 or 3 weeks time. On April 27th, NDP flailing on health, housing, and CFS files, and you've certainly seen the evidence of that in the last few weeks, with things increasingly getting worse and worse, whether it's the emergency room, St. Boniface Hospital, just in the news for a very bad reason, leaving a woman who couldn't breathe on a stretcher in a hallway for 20 minutes. But in that, I discussed the NDP plans for a safe injection site, the numerous NDP supporters that are trying to influence the government to move towards safe, so-called safe supply. I talked, again, alone in Winnipeg. The mainstream media doesn't talk about the BC experience. We know the BC experience was rotten because they turned around and begged the feds, and it took Trudeau. Trudeau stuck in the middle, not knowing what to do, having to admit that this experiment was a failure, embarrassing himself to all the far-left lunatic pro-hard-drug regime governments, all his allies in the international affairs of the world, having to back down and agree that BC could recriminalize or restore criminalization, I guess, of drug use in parks, in hospitals, near schools. So we'll see if the NDP in Manitoba continues to push towards it. Of course, they are pushing towards a safe injection site. You know, it will be nowhere near the home of any of the members of the legislature of the governing caucus. I'll be keeping track in the next couple of weeks of the omnibus bill, $24 billion of spending and a record deficit as well. Bill 37 being tabled that'll ram through a number of pieces of controversial legislation as part of a budget bill and without individual consultation, including putting money back in the pockets of the NDP by restoring the election subsidy to 50%, all sorts of amendments on property tax increases, income tax increases, eliminating the debt reduction target for Manitoba Hydro, which is just absolutely perverse and shows how nobody in the NDP's ever run a business in their life. I'll be keeping track of that as well. Item last, I think this is last, when it comes to provincial politics, it has come to pass. Heather Stephenson departed the legislature, I guess it was actually on Monday. And with her departure, there's now an open seat. Wahb Kanous saying that he's looking at making sure that there's a by-election in relatively short order so that the people of Tuxedo can be represented. He said that he wished he had campaigned more because Heather Stephenson only won the seat by 300 votes. How much of that was an anti-Stephenson vote as opposed to people really wanting to vote in the NDP in Tuxedo, we'll see. The party somehow, as one person put it, Shannon Martin is running for the nomination. He, formerly of Midland, formerly of McPhillips, lost the nomination. I can't even remember where he was trying to go again. In any event, out of politics, now looking to get back in after the things he said and did. There are so many Tories who cannot believe the party's even allowing him to run. He's probably the, how do I put this? if you look at politics by shade, he'd be the reddest of the Tories, I think, in the current crop. But he would not be, he's not facing an empty field in seeking the nomination in tuxedo. I'm told that there's two Jewish candidates. One I haven't confirmed yet. The other, I saw a letter from them out to the community asking for their support, who promises to be a strong voice for traditional Western democratic values and for the Jewish community. And that is the lawyer, Larry Pinsky, who I knew when he was the littlest of little kids. And it's amazing to me that, you know, to see how people, what happens to people in their lives. And a kid you used to walk home from when they were in, you know, kindergarten or grade one, and you were in like grade five or whatever. And a strong contender, in my opinion, to win the nomination in tuxedo. Not take anything away from any of the other candidates, but Larry's a well-qualified and eloquent, and would be a great representative, a great thinker in the legislature. So supposedly there's four candidates looking. Shannon Martin, we know, is he's been out knocking doors. Larry Pinsky, there's, as I mentioned, another candidate, Jewish candidate, and I just haven't gotten confirmation, though I think I'm right, but it's a well-known name, a well-known family name. Who would the fourth candidate be, and is it Kevin Klein? I think it is, but I have not spoken with Kevin lately, and I probably will try to find out whether he is, in fact, the fourth candidate. That's what people believe, but I haven't seen that actually published anywhere. So the Tories, you know, it's a good thing. They can't figure out how to have a proper race for leader, but they sure have figured out how to have a proper place, a proper process. So far, we'll see. But at least there's some competition in tuxedo lining up, as opposed to competition for the leadership seat that people are sort of kicking the tires, but no real big moves as yet. And why would there be? That won't be for a year. This race in tuxedo, I don't know that I have an idea, but it could be that by-election will take place maybe in November or something, towards the end of November, and get somebody seated going into the new year. But again, it's all up to Wab Kanu, and I don't know how much of a hurry he really is to uphold democracy. He certainly can't be thinking that he's on the upswing in tuxedo or anywhere else, because healthcare keeps getting worse and worse. The public confidence is not exactly at a sterling height. So much of the legislation and so many instances, you know, they've done a great job. Well, look, with this omnibus bill, they've done a great job already shutting up threatening foster parents with dire consequences for speaking up. And now they just shut out people completely on so many important pieces of legislation involving crown corporations, involving personal taxation. And they just shut down that under Bill 37 by making it a finance bill, a budget bill. So, you know, Wab Kanu's commitment to democracy, might be a little lukewarm right now. That concludes this episode of The Great Canadian Talk Show. As I mentioned, every episode's available on the podcast tab on actionline.ca. It's almost that time again, because I've got to get back to work, and there's quite a workload, as you saw just by this single episode, because this one's going to end up clocking in at around an hour, which is longer than I want to go. We're on the verge of adding some new doohickeys. A second podcast and probably a third, as well as some other features. I'm going to be looking for financial support. Get a head start. Get the jump on all of them. If you appreciate what we do, if you appreciate what we stand for, if you appreciate that I will ask the questions nobody else will ask, and hold your city councilors, your MLAs, your members of parliament to account. Go to the donate tab. You can use Interact through the email address. You can use PayPal, or otherwise contact me for any other arrangements to get some support this way. It's time to go big or go home, and so this is what's got to be done. You need somebody independent to take a look at what's going on our streets, in our courts, with crime, with our legislature, with City Hall, and with the federal government too. I try to spread myself perhaps a little too thin at times, but I bring you information you will not hear anywhere else. My listeners trust me. My sources trust me. There are many deeply involved in political circles who will give me information they don't trust other reporters with to look into, to verify, to analyze, to let you know what's going on so that you can protect your interests, so that you can protect your business, so that you can protect your family, so that you can protect the values that you hold dear. That's why I'm here. With your support, I can make it happen. Please check out the donate page. First pitch in a while. Thanks for putting up with it. Still to come, more interviews, including with Councillor Jason Schreier, one of these days, sometime soon. I've got a lot of other matters to look at. And hey, maybe we'll get an interview with Councillor Matt Allard before too long as well. Season 5 is coming up, but not until we make all these other changes. So we're going to continue to ride it out. This has been episode 44 of Season 4. As always, we do this because you have the power. Thank you for listening.
And they're saying the judge got it wrong. Everyone got it wrong. Everyone is wrong, but the city of Winnipeg.
Let you know what's being done that's right, and more likely what's being done that's wrong and swindling you out of your hard-earned tax dollars. Here for you, as always,
The Great Canadian Talk Show on actionline.ca. Also available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you want to get right down to business.
If your neighborhood's having trouble with crisis and crime, you don't think you're getting the kind of response you should be getting from your city council or your MLA, we are the Winnipeg Watchdog
with Marty Gold.
Thanks for listening to The Great Canadian Talk Show. If you want to email Marty, send it to tgcts1@gmail.com or follow him on Twitter @tgcts.